here's what people are saying about Lisa Wexler.
Fantastic show. Love your comments and how you're so nice to people.
Back to the Lisa Wexler Show on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
Welcome back to the show. You know that I'm obsessed with science because I'm not a scientist, right? So I'm obsessed with that, which I don't know. And our next guest is an extraordinary scientist. What a background. Brown University. She studied here at Yale in Connecticut. She's got some Connecticut roots. She went to Stanford University. All the biggies that we produced in this country. But her name is Anissa Ramirez, and she's also somebody who knows how to tell a good story. She's written a book called The Alchemy of Us, How Humans and Matter Transformed One Another. It's winning a ton of prizes, including right here in Connecticut, the Nonfiction Prize for Best Book, the LA Times Book Prize finalist, lots of different prizes, because what we need, and we've talked about how much we need it, is we need people of intelligence and knowledge to be translating what they know to the rest of us, to communicate it in a way that we can understand it and value it. Because we have trouble lately, Americans, valuing, this is my opinion, we don't value science enough. So, Professor Ramirez, Dr. Ramirez, Anissa, how would you like me to call you this morning? Welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show.
Well, thank you very much. You can just call me Anissa.
Anissa, what a pretty name. So Anissa, I'm so impressed with this book, and we don't have that much time. I know you are stuck for time. What I want to know is, can you tell us the story of clocks? You do such amazing research into time and the importance of clocks and the telling of time from Greenwich, England, you know, all the way to the quartz clock in Manhattan. Talk to us. Tell us the story of clocks.
Well, what I found interesting is that there was a lady in the late 1800s who had this incredible job. She sold time. See, people needed to know the precise time, but they had slow clocks. You know, sometimes it was a little ahead or a little behind. And the precise time was at the Royal Observatory. So once a week, she would go out to the Royal Observatory up this very, very steep hill, and she would collect the time with a very precise pocket watch that she had named Arnold. And then she'd walk to various businesses like factories and newspapers and banks and train stations. And she was called the Greenwich Time Lady. And I really love this story because it really talked about how important timekeeping was, so much so that a person could have a job selling it.
That is unbelievable. So why was there no universal time at that time? Like, why was she the only one to know the time?
Well, everyone had a clock, but clocks weren't very precise. Sometimes they were slow. Maybe you have an old grandfather clock and you know that every now and then you have to kind of move the arm so that it's back to the right time. And they didn't have television to tell them the precise time. Remember, you know, sometimes you look on television and it will say the precise time is so-and-so. Nobody had that. The precise time was located at the Royal Observatory. So she went to go get it because no one had the luxury to go several miles to go collect it.
And she was convinced that her pocket watch would keep the time long enough for her to be able to sell the time.
Yes, her pocket watch was a chronometer, so it was better made than a regular pocket watch. It was one that would be used on the ocean. And so it would keep the precise time at least for that day, and that's all she needed.
That's extraordinary. We're talking with Anissa Ramirez. The book is called The Alchemy of Us. And you write how humans and matter transformed one another. What does that title come from? What are you trying to get at with that subtitle?
Well, the subtitle is really what the book's about. It's about how we humans think that we create something. But what I'm trying to get across is that when you create something, it actually changes you sometimes. Sometimes it does it in surprising ways, as I show in The Alchemy of Us, and sometimes it shows it happens immediately. So what I'm trying to show in The Alchemy of Us is that there are many inventions around us, some of them very, very simple, and they've shaped us. And I want to show you how. I show you how the light bulb has actually changed our health, how the telegraph actually changed language. If you look at books written before the telegraph and look at books written after the telegraph, you'll see that sentences are shorter. One of the things that shortened them was the telegraph. It couldn't handle a lot of information, so people had to write shorter sentences. So these technologies that we kind of ignore actually shape the world that we're in. So humans and matter transform one another.
Yeah, that is really true. And let's just go back to the clock for a minute. What would our modern day life be like if we couldn't tell time? I don't think we could do anything.
Well, what's so strange is that people used to tell the time by the position of the sun. So in Connecticut, there were several different time zones. So if I said, meet me at 10:30, I would have to ask you, which 10:30? Do you mean Stanford's 10:30? Do you mean Hartford's 10:30? Because if I travel seven miles east or west, I have to change my clock by a minute. So we lived in different pockets of time. It was really crazy and very confusing. So if I said I had to meet you, I would just hang out for the day because there was really no way for me to know precisely what time you meant or what time it was.
So did people tell time by saying things like, I don't know, like when the sun is at a certain place in the horizon, but that's so impossible. What if there's a cloud and you can't see where the sun is?
So, that's right. So it was the sunrise, sunset, and high noon. That was as precise as we could be until we got to better timekeepers.
And when did we get to better timekeepers? What years, more or less?
Well, clocks have been around for a long time. You can find old antique clocks if you go, to the flea market. It was just a matter of there being a uniform time grid. And that happened in the United States around 1883 when we locked into the time zones that we know now, the four time zones that we have across the United States. Before, like I said before, states used to have separate time zones where one state could have like 27 time zones. So in 1883, we all conformed to these four zones, and then we can know exactly what time people met.
I mean, I never knew that before. We're chatting with Anissa Ramirez. The book is The Alchemy of Us. And just imagining what life was like, let's say in the Civil War, right? We learn about the Civil War all the time. If we didn't have uniform times, like how did generals decide when a battle should start? Like, how did they do anything if nobody knew when time was?
Well, it seems very romantic, but when people say meet me at sunset or meet me at sunrise or meet me at high noon, it's because that was the most precise version of time that they had at the time. Now we can be exact and say, okay, meet me at 11:03. That was impossible back then.
It's amazing. So I want to ask you as well, you talk a little bit about the camera, the Polaroid camera specifically. But, can you just comment on the transformative nature of the camera on the human being? Because I think it is the single transformative invention in terms of how we've seen ourselves, our own self-image, our own esteem of ourselves. I was reading a diary, Professor, from 1905, and it stayed with me my whole life. It was a woman's diary. She was about 20 at the time, maybe 15. She was an adolescent. And it was a diary that was found 100 years later. And what she spoke about was her development as a human being, how she wanted to better herself, how she wanted to better her character, how she was struggling with trying to overcome her faults. And her faults were, none of them were about her appearance. None of them. They were all about whether she was nice to someone, whether she was patient, whether she was a good friend, her relationships with her sister. They were very internal, preoccupations that she had about how she was going to develop her character. And I think it's fair to say that a 15-year-old today would not be as preoccupied with that commonly. Maybe the uncommon one would. But the common one would be very preoccupied with how they look. And I'm just wondering about your thoughts about the development of the camera when you talk about the alchemy of how inventions have transformed us.
That's a very good question. You know, when Lincoln was president, very few people knew what he looked like because there were very few pictures of him. And people didn't really see themselves much either. If they had a looking glass, which was actually a luxury, or if they saw themselves in a sheet of ice or a pool, the surface of a pool. But there weren't many opportunities for people to be captured unless they got a portrait of themselves. And so now it's very easy for us to see ourselves. We have lots of cameras. We have cameras everywhere. And so cameras are part of our own development, and it's actually causing us to be a little bit more concerned about how we look, as you mentioned. But cameras have actually been very transformative because they gave us information about the world around us. By putting cameras, special kinds of cameras, in satellites, we got a better sense of what the world looks like. You know, we used to think the world was round. It actually isn't round. It's actually the shape of a lumpy potato. That we never would have known unless we had better cameras. So cameras have been very transformative. And what I talk about in The Alchemy of Us is how on Earth they've been significant because they've actually been tools of oppression. The popular camera of Polaroid's instant film, which was a top gift that everybody wanted to give each other at Christmas, it was actually used by South Africa's apartheid system to track and monitor the whereabouts of black South Africans. So here we have a technology that on one side of the world is much loved, and on the other side of the planet is used for nefarious ways. So technologies are not neutral. They can bring out the best of us, but they can also bring out the worst of us.
Yeah, I think that that's true. And you know, I'm thinking about the camera today and the way China has decided that they're going to have an image of every journalist. You know, they're going to capture people's images. And Facebook got rid of its face reading because it was discriminatory. And that's all part of the camera. You couldn't do that without the camera. That's all the camera. That's all the camera.
It's the decisions that we make on how we're going to use the camera, but it's also the decisions of how we build inside of the camera. So some cameras do a very good job of picking up pigments of all people of all different races, but some cameras do not. And that's because of the decisions that were made in the algorithms when the engineers and computer scientists were programming it. They were testing their film. They were testing their algorithms for the cameras on a certain population. And sometimes if they make that population very, very small, that means when the camera goes out into the world, it won't work for everyone. So cameras really capture us, but they also capture information about the society as well.
One of the things that you talk about in your book and you give a lot of attention to is the development of steel. And you write here that Sir Henry Bessemer was a British inventor who created a steel making process by removing the excess carbon in cast iron with a blast of air. Could you explain that? You're a scientist. What is that? What was that about?
Well, I was trying to show this huge chemistry experiment that he was doing. When he put in air into this molten vat of iron and carbon, he had to remove the carbon. And air has oxygen in it. So the oxygen would combine with the carbon and it would go out as a gas. And so then he would end up with just steel. And then he could add in the carbon that he wanted. Now, what I didn't mention is that when you add that blast of air and the carbon is removed, it's actually pretty violent. It looked like a volcano. So that's the reason why I call that chapter in The Alchemy of Us, Bessemer's Volcano, because I'm trying to show how this simple chemical experiment gave rise to a huge blast.
Let me ask you something. We're chatting with Anissa Ramirez, The Alchemy of Us. Where did you grow up?
I'm from Jersey City.
You're from Jersey City. And
yeah.
What was your earliest influence that got you to become the scientist you are today?
Well, I was always a very curious kid, and I took things apart. Luckily, my parents didn't punish me because they realized I was very curious and I wasn't being malicious. But what really did it for me was a program on PBS. There was a program called 321 Contact, and it had kids solving problems. They were a little older than me. And one of the kids was this African-American girl. And when I saw an African-American girl asking questions like myself, I saw my reflection. And then later on, when I was told that what she was doing was science, I said, well, I'm going to do science because that's what I like to do. So it was a kid who was very curious, and it was a person who saw the reflection on public television that gave rise to the path that I took in becoming a material scientist.
Did you go to public school through high school?
I went to Catholic school. The public schools in Jersey City in the 70s and 80s were not the hottest. And so my parents were working class, and they saved all their money to send me and my two brothers to the other side of town to go to this to the Italian neighborhood where the Catholic school was. And I went to an all-girls high school, which was also a Catholic school. It was actually not the best school in Jersey City, but it was a very, very good school, but it didn't prepare me exactly what I needed, because when I applied to Brown, although I was a top student back in my high school, when I got to Brown, I was not at world-class level. So I had to learn new study habits. I had really great tutors. I had a great professor named Mrs. Morris who tutored me and got me on track. And so when I was successful at Brown, then I went on to Stanford. So it was the rough side of the road, but I'm so glad that I succeeded.
Yeah, I'm glad that you succeeded too. And I'm just interested in your education because, you know, people who want to find an education, I guess no matter what, right? What do they say? When the student is willing, the teacher appears. Your persistence, your enthusiasm for science, you just kept finding the teachers you needed to find along the way. That's what it, and now you're teaching, now you're giving back.
Well, thank you. Well, the thing that worked for me is that I knew that science was fun. But when I was taking those science classes, it wasn't fun. And I think that seed was put in early on that it was fun was important because I knew if I hung in there that it eventually would become fun again. And that was way into my 20s. So that's a long time. But then along the way, I said, you know what? The way that they're teaching science isn't right. And if I can do anything to change that, I will. And so the alchemy of us actually comes from that old, old promise when I was an undergraduate at Brown.
It's important because we're chatting with Anissa Ramirez, because science was very intimidating to me. It seemed like I needed to be a math genius first in order to tackle science. I looked at that periodic table and it was only numbers and symbols. I didn't understand anything about it. And so I'm an admirer of scientists, and I try and, as a layman, understand what I can. And I started a program called the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award, where we honored kids that love science in high school and allowed them to speak on the radio about their science projects. That was the award. And I did that for 7 years. I loved it. Oh, yeah, I loved it. I'm still looking for a sponsor because Accorda wasn't able to sponsor it anymore. So, you know, as a layman, I loved it. But I will say, as a student in school, it was very intimidating to me. What are your thoughts on that? Like, how can we do science better to make it less intimidating? We need more scientists. You know, if you track Americans compared to the rest of the world, we're doing very poorly compared to some other countries.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Well, I think that some of the issues with the way that we teach science is that we're actually trying to make people future scientists. And I don't think that's what we need. I think there's plenty of classes that should be designed to create future scientists. But if it's a general science class, we should make the material relevant so that it's meaningful to people so that they can make decisions for themselves. And so the reason why I took the approach of telling stories with The Alchemy of Us is that I knew that stories were stickier than me telling you fact after fact after fact. In fact, the facts are in there. It's just that it's peppered in the story and you don't know it. It's sort of like I'm giving you vegetables and you don't know it because it's kind of mixed in the sauce. So we train people in these classes to become future scientists. And then we make these classes that we eliminate them. A lot of these classes are called weed out classes, where we want to eliminate people to see how competent they are. And this is absolutely the opposite approach that we should be taking in the 21st century. We need everyone to have some science class tailored to what they need. If you're a nurse, you need more science. But if you're going to be opening a store, you need science, but you don't need that type of science. So we should do a better job of tailoring the science to what people need. That takes time, that takes effort, that takes will, and we don't have that right now.
No, we don't. And before I let you go, Anissa Ramirez, tell us a little bit what you learned, the story of Bell Labs and how important Bell Labs has been to the development of the American economy and these transformational inventions. Talk to us a little bit about Bell Labs. What was Bell Labs? What is Bell Labs?
I'm a little spoiled because I got to work at Bell Labs, which is a research center that was part of AT&T in Murray Hill, New Jersey. And it was a monopoly, so I'll admit that. But it had this luxury that 10% of its property, of its profits, went to research. And a lot of that research went to, you know, developing things for the telephone system and telecommunications. But also it went to asking big questions and answering that. And along the way, you would find things that were useful. So a lot of the technologies that we have, like the telephone and the, you know, being able to see television, all these things were sponsored by people using the telephone. And so Bell Labs was a engine for innovation, and it was a fantastic place to be as a scientist because there were Nobel laureates there. A young person can come up to speed very, very quickly, and maybe they go off and they become a professor, and then they encourage the next generation. And I don't know of another place like that. It's kind of sad, the state of affairs it is today. The Bell Labs that I got to see doesn't really exist. But it was the hub of innovation, and it's given rise to America having the edge that it once had.
It definitely did. And What to me was fascinating about it is that the people that worked there, I mean, they weren't working there exclusively for money. I think that that's a really big piece, because what's happened is the entrepreneurial spirit has taken over with a fervor that has diminished to some extent our innovation. I mean, in other words, in some cases it's enhanced it, but in other cases it's diminished it, because we have all these litigious fights about patents and who has the right to what, and people keep their secrets for a long time because they want to make sure that they can patent it and they don't share information in time. And with the exception of open code, I think America has been a little bit on the wrong track. The greed has been the driving force.
Well, I don't like to generalize, but I do think that scientists think of the world a little differently. And when I asked my friends at Bell Laboratories about why they loved it, and it was because they had great problems to work on and they had great people to work on them with. You don't hear anything about money. In fact, when you join Bell Laboratories, you sign something where you sign away your patents. People aren't really interested in that because they really want to have the ability to focus on problems and use their mind, use their creativity, and create something that never existed before. That's what gets a scientist really, really high. Now, as you say, entrepreneurs want to, they have to focus on the bottom line. They've got to keep the lights on. But it does taint how one looks at problems, what problems one a person will focus on and the like. And so, again, we've just lost this wonderful gymnasium of Bell Laboratories where we just solved really, really interesting problems. Sometimes they were useful. Sometimes they were useful 100 years from now. That's okay.
Right.
That's not the premise. The premise is to solve great problems, put great people together, and create things that wouldn't be possible without them.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show, Anissa Ramirez, The Alchemy of Us, the Connecticut Nonfiction Book Award winner, a winner of a lot of different accolades and awards, How Humans and Matter Transform One Another, a great Christmas gift, definitely something you should buy for somebody else and buy for yourself and read it. It's a marvelous book. It's interesting. It's engaging. Thank you so much, Anissa, for coming on the show today. What a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
We'll be right back with more of The Lisa Wexler Show.